schedule following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room. Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion Live on LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. Thank you for everybody joining us live. Of course, thank you for everybody in the chat room. And thank you for everybody joining us on the podcast. In the chat room right now, we have Anorexic Pillow, Chris 1019, Darth Marley, Giorgio, myself, and the John are in there. And tonight, after the news digest, we'll be joined by Michael J.W. Stickings with a review of what's going on in politics this week. And then in the second hour, we'll do our 4400 season finale review and discussion with Ken Gold of MediaBoulevard.com. And then, of course, Koenig Rules will be along to finish off our discussion of the mad professor of subject to discussion, Dr. Koenig Rules, with our finish off the 4400 review, as well as some news about Battlestar Galactica. And before I get into the news digest and the news papers, the Gilligan's Island's SS Minnow is for sale. The ship that stranded crew and the eclectic passengers of 1960s television classic Gilligan's Island on a chartered isle, blah, 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 is for sale by its Canadian owner. The SS Minnow, and we all know, went on a three-hour cruise and everything else. And so apparently the boat itself is for sale for $99,000 in Canadian dollars, or $89,500. A new owner may buy a piece of television nostalgia. So that's pretty interesting. And then in the local...
When does it end?
When does it end? Why are you going to buy it? Well, the 3 hours.
What's that?
The 3 hour tour has been going for 40 years now. So, on any time soon, it's not going to be ending a 3 hour tour with the skipper and Marianne there. I like the movie star, Tina Louise. Remember her? And in the Las Vegas Review Journal today, we had a on the front page, it talks about the Las Vegas white elephant known as the monorail. They're gonna expand the monorail. Those of you who don't know, the monorail in Las Vegas only stops about five hotels, and those are the only ones that would pay to have a station put in, and as well as the convention center. But apparently they're going to expand it now, so they're going to add stops. They're going to hook up at the airport, and there's Gilligan's Island. There you go. Wow. The mate was a mighty sailing man. The skipper brave and sure. There we go. That's
Ginger,
nice.
Or Marianne?
Ginger, of course. Are you kidding me? A
3 hour tour. Yeah. Or Mrs. Howe.
Oh, I don't know if I need the cash. I don't know. And a millionaire and his wife, the Thurston Howell III, and his wife was Lovey and everything. That was a classic. It's amazing. What's her name? Always had a new dress every episode, though. 3 hour tour. They brought everything, damn thing they had. Same with the Howells. Howells always dressed in nines, and they only supposed to go to 3 hour tour. So I don't know. And they talk about expanding this monorail. It's going to go from the Sands Expo Center next to the Venetian Hotel, the Mandalay Bay Convention Center, and the convention facilities planned at the Boyd Gaming's Echelon Place, which is going to replace the Stardust Hotel. So, and then of course the big story about that. What's his name, was captured here in Las Vegas last night, that polygamist, and he was captured over by the racetrack, and he's the one who's suspected having like 60 wives and 100 children or something like that, right?
Yeah, apparently, he bought a new car.
And that, well, yeah, red Escalade.
And he didn't have tags on the car.
Oh, and they pulled him over.
But how many cars you see out there that don't have tags? I see a lot of them. So what's the chances of him getting pulled over?
I don't know. Seeing a red Escalade in North Las Vegas, right? Set off an alarm signal and with no license plate. So that's good they captured him. And, of course, they had the fiasco on the right with the JonBenet Ramsey suspect won't be charged. I swear, the same team that's running this war in Iraq is in charge of this JonBenet Ramsey car business here, because it's the same ridiculousness going on with that. And also talk about the plane crash in Kentucky. Apparently the plane was on the wrong runway when it crashed. So, and then in the Nevada section, they have the polls of the local races for office here. They have, of course, the Democrat for Senate, Jack Carter, who's the son of Jimmy Carter. He's running against the incumbent, John Ensign. Well, anyway, it's neck and neck. Ensign's got 48%, and then Jack Carter's at 45%, so that's good news. So, yeah, I mean, you've seen John Ensign. He acts like he's, you know, God or something. You know what I mean? I'd be glad to see Jack Carter send him back to his regular profession of giving dogs and cats rectal exams. I mean, that's where he belongs. He struts around there. You know, his father is a big wheel with one of the casino companies in town, so of course that adds to his ego, which is about the size of the MGM Grand Hotel. So that's good news. And in the governor's race, they had the Republican Jim Gibbons at 44%, and his opponent, Democrat Dina Titus, she's actually ahead of him by 3%. So if she wins, she'll be the first female governor elected in the state of Nevada. So that's good news. It could roll up for Hillary in 2008. You know, get the ball rolling here. And USA Today, of course, this is the one-year anniversary of Katrina, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it because the media has been bashing us over the head with it all week now. Again, they talk about the Ramsey fiasco, and they talk about Georgia, the world champs of the Little League World Series, and, of course, 1 year later, New Orleans. And in the Life section, they talk about Tom Cruise making his movie-making deal. The Redskins owner is going to finance his films, so he's going to still be around for a while. And the World Trade Center movie donates $2.6 million to four charities that honor people lost in 9/11 attacks. So with that, we'll move on to the news to you. And today on Hardball, without Chris Matthews, Nora O'Donnell was sitting in. And they talk about the Rumsfeld warns against appeasement. Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld said Tuesday that the world faces a new type of fascism and warned against repeating the pre-World War II mistake of appeasement. Rumsfeld alluded to critics of the Bush administration's war policies in terms of associated with the failure to stop Nazism in the 1930s. He said, quote, "A time when a certain amount of cynicism and moral confusion set in among the Western democracies." So he's, of course, rallying off at the mouth again, Rumsfeld. And I did get some emails bashing me for claiming, for being upset that how dare I compare Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld to the Three Stooges. So, yes, that was a big disservice of mine, a big disservice to the Three Stooges for comparing them to Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. So I apologize to the insult to the Three Stooges families for comparing Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Bush to Mo, Larry, and Curly. So I do apologize for that. And then also today we had the curious omission on the FBI's most wanted list. This is from the Washington Post. This says, apparently in the section we have Osama bin Laden. They say he's wanted for the deadly U.S. embassy bombings in East Africa. There he is. And from August 7th, 1998. But what is missing is any mention of the role in the September 11th, 2001 attacks. So that's going to get the conspiracy kooks all up in the tither about that, because, you know, everything's, you know, it happened. You know, no, Bush didn't do it. They didn't set off missiles in the damn World Trade Center buildings, for crying out loud. But anyway, and what else? Also from today, GOP's conservative and liberal liberal wings at war heading to the 06 campaign. It's from the GOP Conservative Insight magazine. President Bush has been trying to maintain a united Republican Party amid flagging conservative support and a split with the GOP's liberal wing. The two wings are so far apart that party strategists no longer envision a united front for the November congressional elections. The strategist said that many of the liberals already alienated from the White House have been campaigning as opponents of the president in an effort to win re-election as part of an expected Democratic sweep of Congress. Yeah, I did see the weather report of that storm brewing off the coast of Africa, and they say it's going to hit the Washington, D.C. area around November 7th or 8th, and that's going to it's called the Hurricane Democratic Party. It's going to wallop D.C., apparently. I have a feeling there's going to be a huge wave coming through there. And I said, as long as we get the House back, let the Democrats take over the House, and then it could be a check on Bush and the the enablers in the GOP Congress. That's what we need. Until we get a third, fourth, or fifth, or sixth party up, we need the Democrats in there at the House to act as a check on Bush. You know, and then let the subpoenas, the blizzard of subpoenas, begin. What else? And talking about the two wings of the Republican Party. Strategists made them liberals already alien from the White House. Blah blah blah. I think we've lost our way," said Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, an possible presidential contender in 2008. And I think the Republicans are going to be in some jeopardy for that, and will be held accountable. So it's about time we hold them accountable for this, fiasco the last 6 years. And also from the Needle Nose blog, it says, "Oops, we did it again. Who'd have thunk it?" They said in this blog. The big air travel terror scare earlier this month was, gasp, overhyped, admits the New York Times. Despite the charges, officials said they were still unsure of one critical question, whether any of the suspects was technically capable of assembling and detonating liquid explosives while airborne. In retrospect, said Michael A. Sheehan, the former deputy commissioner of counterterrorism in the New York Police Department, there has been too much hyperventilating going on. So, it turns out, that's kind of starting to collapse that whole story there. And also from the Fire Dog Lake blog, Christy Harden Smith says, explain this. She goes, this whole last throes concept sure is confusing, but at least there is no civil war in Iraq, right? As the Iraqi stand up, we'll stand down. Isn't that still the talking point du jour? So, why is it that the last 24 hours has seen headlines like this? Group of Iraqi soldiers refuses to go to Baghdad. Radical militia and Iraqi army in fierce battle. Iraqi troops battle Shiite militiamen in southern city. Dozens killed in Iraq. Clashes in Iraq. More are wounded. At least 100 die as militia force Iraqi troops out of town. But what's a few headlines among friends, eh? She says. So that's true. Absolutely. Absolutely. I say the Democrats got to make this a referendum on Bush and the GOP Congress, the enablers, and also this war in Iraq. If we do that, hit them over the head with this, and I think it's all going to be ours, I think. And also Tuesday, Bush White House said to be subpoenaed by wiretap lawyers. This is a sign of things to come, I believe. Two attorneys representing claimants in a lawsuit over wiretapping by the NSA claimed that they have sent subpoenas to the White House on Tuesday. Bruce Efron and Carl Mayer, who say they represent hundreds of plaintiffs in lawsuits against Verizon, AT&T, and the U.S. government, will announce today they are serving both the Bush administration and Verizon with subpoenas. The announcement is due to arrive at 4:30 p.m. outside of Verizon headquarters in New York. The subpoena is directed to President Bush, the Office of Legal Counsel, the Department of Justice, and the Chief Legal Counsel for Verizon have already been sent and should reach their targets tomorrow. The subpoenas come on the heels of two federal court decisions that were seen as blows to the Bush administration's warrantless spying program. Earlier this month, federal judge Anna Diggs Taylor ruled the entire program unconstitutional and illegal. Another federal judge in San Francisco rejected the Bush administration's attempt to dismiss these lawsuits by claiming they breached national security. Mayer explained that the subpoena seeks to learn whether the Bush administration has unlawfully targeted journalists, peace activists, libertarians, members of Congress, or generated an enemies list. So, amazing, amazing. Let's see, what's going on in chat room? Subpoena weather, just the war umbrella. Nothing wrong with maligning people, just malign. I don't know what that is, but. And Beyond Macaca, the photograph that haunts George Allen. This is from Tuesday from The Nation magazine. Only a decade ago, as governor of Virginia, Allen personally initiated an association with the Council of Conservative Citizens, the successor organization to the Segregationist White Citizens Council, and among the largest white supremacist groups. In 1996, while Governor Allen entered the Washington Hilton Hotel to attend the Conservative Political Action Conference, an annual gathering of conservative movement organizations, he strode to a booth at the entrance of the exhibition hall festooned with the large Confederate flags and a booth operated by the Council of Conservative Citizens, the CCC, at the time a co-sponsor of CPAC. After meeting with CCC founder and former White Citizens Council organizer Gordon Lee Baum and two of his cohorts, Allen suggested they pose for a photograph with then-NRA spokesman and actor Charlton Heston. The photo appeared in a summer 1996 issue of the CCC's newsletter, The Citizens Informer. And according to Baum, Allen had not naively stumbled into a chance meeting with unfamiliar people. He knew exactly who and what the CCC was about, and from Baum's point of view, was engaged in a straightforward political transaction. And he says, it helped us as much as it helped him, blah, blah, blah. So there you go. There you go. And I saw something where actually there's a poll where now his opponent is running neck and neck with Allen. So, and that's a good thing there, because he's trying to get himself in there as a candidate for president. And hopefully this bloodies him up pretty good here. And then they have, what's his name, John McCain celebrated his 70th birthday today. And don't forget, he's 70 years old. And then if he does become president, he'd be the oldest person inaugurated for president in our country's history. Reagan was 69 when he was inaugurated, so McCain would be older than Reagan in his first term. So Israel is reevaluating its response. Although Israel was optimistic in the beginning, the quick realization that the conflict would be much more difficult than expected led to a decrease in Israeli army morale. Monday, after much public discussion, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is set to announce the establishment of a government commission of inquiry that will look into the conflict and its failures. Like I said, if they can do that for their little war they had, how come the GOP Congress can't do that for this Iraq fiasco? You know? I don't know. Enablers. They're enabling him. You know? It's like an alcoholic. They're enabling him to keep doing this. From the Boomin Tribune blog, a year later, an image destroyed. 1 year after Hurricane Katrina, the people have not forgotten. Bush did nothing for the people, said one Republican, Joseph Ippolito, 75, a retired highway superintendent from Bayville, New Jersey. Bush didn't have the proper people in office to take care of Katrina. The whole administration is wacky, and I voted twice for him, said Joe Ippolito, a GOP Republican voter from New Jersey. 51% of the people are dissatisfied with the way Bush responded to the emergency, and 44% still have little or no confidence in his administration to handle a similar emergency should it arise again. So that's again from the Boomin Tribune, so pretty good. And also Monday from the opednews.com, international law authority rips Bush policies. Uh-oh. Dr. Francis A. Boyle of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, he said, and he's more than a little ticked off at the moment at President Bush. Dr. Boyle's credentials are a little short of amazing. He was the expert who drafted the U.S. domestic implementing legislation for the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, approved unanimously by both houses of Congress and signed into law by President, read my lips, George H.W. Bush. The Bush administration demonstrates little, if any, respect for fundamental considerations of international law, international organizations, and human rights, let alone appreciation of the requirements for maintaining international peace and security, Boyle asserts. Wow. So it's always good when they start feeding on each other. Claiming President Bush policies represent a gross deviation from those basic rules of international deportment and civilized behavior the U.S. once stood for. The Boyle said, the America's foreign policies today constitute ongoing criminal activity under well-recognized principles of both international law and U.S. domestic law. In particular, the Nuremberg Charter, the Nuremberg Judgment, and the Nuremberg Principles. So they're all just having at them now. And also today, from the Progressive Daily Beacon, four Bush disasters. When will the American people hold the president and the Republican Congress to account? That's coming on Election Day. I think I'm going to hold them all accountable. What do September 11th, Iraq, Afghanistan, and New Orleans all have in common? All four are disasters, either started by or made worse by President Bush. Two, throughout the disasters, Bush has had the benefit of a Republican Congress who has proven to be his most faithful and loyal accomplice. Rather than doing their duty and providing oversight, Congress has flatly refused to, and in a serious manner, investigate the president's failures because doing so would have risked political fallout. The question then becomes, when will the American people and America's mainstream media, based on an incredible string of colossal failures, begin to hold Bush and the Republicans to account? Pretty strong there. Pretty strong. And what else? From the McLaughlin Group on Sunday, John McLaughlin, hardly a liberal, he said that the human toll, U.S. military dead, 2,617, U.S. military wounded, including amputeed, wounded, severely injured, and mentally ill, 62,800. So where did this number come from? You know, so add that to the other. That's, over 65,000 dead and wounded now in this war. Iraq civilians dead, 130,000. Iraq price tag, $1.5 billion a week. That does not include the ancillary costs called the tail costs, estimated at $400 million a week. Adding it up, it's $1.9 billion a week, $7.6 billion a month, and $271 million per day for this war in Iraq. Unbelievable. It's just disgusting. You know what? And we're right back where they started. This war is right back where it started. You know, what have we gained over there? You know, somebody said maybe they'll declare, in the Bush administration will kind of backdoor this and declare a mistrial with Saddam Hussein and send him back out and retake the country, because it seems like he's the only one who's able to hold that damn place together, you know. Either that, or like Joe Biden said on Sunday, you divide up the country in three, make it like states, have one central government like here we have in the U.S. I mean, that's an idea, but I mean, it's clear they have no clue what's going on over there. This is a Democratic challenger, James Webb, pulls ahead of Senator George Allen in Virginia, according to Zogby. The Democratic challenger, James Webb, former Navy Secretary under President Reagan, has pulled ahead of Virginia's Republican Senator Allen by one percentage point in the latest Zogby poll. This poll also puts Democrats in front of 14 of the open 19 gubernatorial races, but the Democratic Party only leads 12 of the 18 Senate races, which wouldn't be enough to regain a majority, even accounting for Vermont, blah, 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 Jeff Jeffords, and blah, blah, blah. And Lieberman's probably going to win his election, too. But as long as we get the House back, that's a good starting point. Imagine Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, the highest elected woman in our country's history would be Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House. And let's see here. Crimson Crystal, remember when Bush sacked his Secretary of Treasury for saying the first year of Iraq would top $200 million? Oh, yeah. He sent him off to run the world court. He's the one that said that the oil profits would pay for this war. What else? The Homeland Security Democrats hit list. The most vulnerable, the airplanes and the airports. So liquid explosives, no system detector. No integrated watch list to watch out for prospective terrorists. No puffer machines to identify tracer explosives. No biometric screening. No air cargo screening. Ports are under screen, and also chemical plants are under secured. So that's the Homeland Security Democrat hit list to nail the Republicans on, I believe. And then Monday from the Washington Post has an interesting article on the rebuilding of the areas hit by Hurricane Katrina. Several stats cited are nearly a third of the hurricane trash in New Orleans is yet to be picked up, according to federal Gulf Coast Recovery Coordinator, blah, blah, blah. There's still some to be cleared in Mississippi as well. Number two, the amount of insured damage from Katrina was more than $55 billion, greater than that from the Hurricane Andrew, the World Trade Center attacks, and the Northridge earthquake combined. Wow. Tallies of electric bills and school enrollment figures show that less than half of New Orleans' pre-storm population of 455,000 has returned. In small towns along the Mississippi coast, from Bay St. Louis to Biloxi, fewer than 5% of the destroyed homes are being rebuilt. Employment in the sprawling New Orleans region has shrunk to 437,000 jobs, off about 30% from pre-storm levels. And within the city, percentage is considerably higher. So it's a big mess. I say it's not just Bush's fault. It's everybody's fault. That clown Mayor Nagin and that doofus Governor Blanco. I mean, those two are clueless. You know, and throwing Bush in the middle just made it worse. You know, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, and Tweedledo-nothing, I guess. And Monday from, this is Rumsfeld, criticizes the public lack of perspective on Iraq war and war on terror from ABC News, the World Newser, their blog. When Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld spoke to the Convention of Veterans of Foreign Wars on Monday, he mounted a spirited defense of the war in Iraq as a front line in the war on terror. Rumsfeld's comments echoed Vice President Cheney's comments to the same veterans group earlier in the day. In excerpts from his remarks, Rumsfeld is critical of what he calls a lack of perspective involved in the current domestic debate over the progress on the war on terror. There is no progress. He's the one who needs some new glasses. Take off those rose-colored glasses and join the real world, you know? And what else? Bush job approval. Gallup has him at 42%. Rasmussen has him at 42%. CBS News has him at 36%. Real Clear Politics has him at they average all the polls. They have Bush at 40.5%. Is on Iraq, 36% approve, 61% disapprove. Katrina, 37% approve, 56% disapprove. In the Pew poll, Bush trustworthiness now at 41%. And September 3rd, it was of last year, excuse me, of 2003, it was at 62%. Not trustworthy, now it's 52%. And in September of 2003, it was at 32%. So he's right in there with, I don't know who else.
Holy cow! Yeah.
And hailing this Iraq war, I mean, he makes he makes Carter look like a genius with the Iran hostage crisis. I mean, I didn't think a Republican mission with the last name of Bush could bungle a foreign policy the way he has, but he's rewritten the book there. I think he looked like bungle in the dictionary. It has George W. Bush's picture next to the definition, I think. Fed helped fuel own inflation headline. It's from the Hubbard. Monday from Reuters, and Jackson Hole, Wyoming, the Federal Reserve must act to head off high inflation as a present danger to the U.S. economy, the White House's former economic advisor said on Saturday. His name is Hubbard, Glenn Hubbard. Glenn Hubbard, now dean of Columbia University's Graduate School of Business, said the threat of high inflation partly reflects the central bank's leisurely two-year string of measured rate increases. He says he believes that the policy has been too accommodative for too long, and now the question is, how do we deal with the current situation? So apparently you're expecting inflation to go crazy now with the slowdowns and everything else, so we'll find out. And also from the nonesoblind.org blog, half the country worries that this group will embroil us in more wars besides the debacle in Iraq. A majority fears that our liberties are in danger from the power grabbing of this one-party government. Two-thirds of the American people sense that the country is heading in the wrong direction, yet this Bush administration keeps on pushing ahead as if they'd not misled us into an ugly morass. After all, they've damaged at home and abroad. They continue to swagger as if only they can keep us secure, and if anyone calls them on their errors and their lawlessness and their deceptions as somehow abetting our enemies. Absolutely shameless, it's what they are. It's time for the whole nation to rise up as one and say to this Bush group, echoing a previous time when the power was shamelessly abused in America, have you no decency, sirs, at long last? Have you no shame? That's right. That's right. So, and also we have the experts warn the U.S. is coming apart at the seams. A pipeline shuts down in Alaska. Equipment failures disrupt air travel in L.A. Electricity runs short at a spy agency in Maryland. The American Society of Civil Engineers last year graded the nation D for its overall infrastructure conditions, estimating it would take $1.6 trillion over 5 years to fix the problem. So that's an air mess, you know. And then not only that, they ran this story about the, I forgot if I had that here, I think McLaughlin had that the, well, it's part of those tail costs for the tanks that are broken down and everything. They're not going to give the bill to Congress until after the elections are over with to save their asses. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, they're hiding all these costs and off the budget. You know, who's paying this? We are. You know, unbelievable. And let's see, because the infrastructure is potholes. They say they need an instrument landing system that guides arriving planes onto a runway at LAX. Failed for the second time in a week, delaying flights. The NSA, the intelligence world's electronic eavesdropping arm, is consuming so much electricity at its headquarters outside Washington that is in danger of exceeding its power supply. It's a think tank they have that the country needs to look at the infrastructure problems we're having in this country. You know, roads need to be expanded. I mean, the population is growing here in Vegas. You can, you know, it takes you 30 minutes to get from one point to the other when it used to take you 15. You know, let's see. Katrina's damage to Bush's standing still haunts his presidency. It was Katrina that broke the sense that the Republicans could govern well, said Newt Gingrich. Wow, in an interview. Bush, he says, was still seen before Katrina as a relatively strong leader, and somewhere in this process there was a substantial erosion because Americans were shocked by the government's failure to perform. The White House's Katrina relief effort seemed off-kilter from the start, Gingrich said, a Republican. In ways large and small, Bush is still paying for the inadequate storm response. Sadly, George Bush has forgotten us, says a radio advertisement running this week in New Orleans. The narrator is Joe Levine, a Republican candidate who is seeking a House seat in November. He says Bush is spending too much time and money on Iraq and not enough living up to his promise to help rebuild New Orleans, he asserts. Wow. More of that. We need more of that. Republicans blasting away at Bush. We need at least 5 or 10 more people blasting away. And a new CBS News poll. Do you approve or disapprove of President Bush's response to the needs of the Katrina victims? Approve is 41%. Could be doing more, 51%. So I think with that, we'll take our music interlude, and hopefully Michael J.W. Dickens will be joining us, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. It is I, George W. Bush. I'm the president. And I'm here tonight with a detailed report on the economy. Now, many people do not realize that since I have been in office, there has been tremendous growth in one major part of the economy. I'm talking, of course, about the national debt. It has grown tremendously since I've been in office. Now, people don't realize that this is actually a money-saving tactic on my part. See, the way I figure, if we no longer have any money, if we no longer have any wealth as a nation, we can see nothing but tremendous savings. We would no longer need a Department of the Treasury. You're not buying it, are you? Who am I kidding? I gotta figure out what I'm gonna do. Ain't no surplus now, it's gone. Oh, the debt grows every day. Oh, the balance on our loans is bigger than Star Jones. Tell your kids they're gonna have to pay. Wonder what I'm gonna do. I wish this debt would go away. I have got to pay these bills. I could sell Dick Cheney's pills or put Congress on eBay. We owe, we owe, we owe. We owe. I couldn't leave the tax code alone. Ain't no surplus, now it's gone. Here is my brand new budget pitch. I'm gonna tell each American. Everybody will be rich if each person will just switch to Geico's insurance plan.
We're back with Michael J.W. Stickings of the Reaction Blog and John Edwards One America Committee Blog. Michael, you there, sir? Hello? Uh-oh. Maybe we lost him. Hello. There you go, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
What do you think of that music interlude we had there? Was that wonderful, wasn't it?
That was good. Yeah. That's the best intro music I could possibly imagine.
You hear the Bush song?
I did, yeah.
Singing about
great.
The surplus, now it's gone, right? I could sing, you know.
Yeah, stick to your political punditry.
Stick to my day job.
That's where your career is.
Yeah, I was just talking about the about Katrina. It's a big anniversary, and and Bush was down there trying to save his ass, right, from the bad press he's been getting since the year has passed, right?
He's doing everything he can to make it seem as if he's done everything he can, and yet he clearly hasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I almost expect him to declare every day Christmas down there in New Orleans, that speech that he's just giving money away, this and this and this, and it's like, geez, what's going on here,
Well, I mean, every time he goes down there, he claims that that New Orleans will be a top priority for him. I don't know if you remember, but Laura Bush went on Extreme Home Makeover, whatever that show is called. And, it's largely been forgotten the past year, hasn't it? I mean, he's been so preoccupied, I suppose, with other things, namely his sagging approval ratings. Mm. He said today down in New Orleans that he's hoping that there will be a better and more effective response next time. Mm. And to me, what that means is that the response to Katrina was not good, not effective. And why are we talking about cleaning up New Orleans a year after it happened?
Yeah.
Shouldn't Bush have been talking about this much more seriously a year ago?
I don't know.
I mean, he gave one prominent speech in a primetime speech in New Orleans, and then it basically dropped off the face of the political map.
Yeah, he really, and then the whole thing about the, of course, Brownie, you're doing a wonderful job, and then the thing with him flying over the mess with on Air Force One, that's haunting him as well, because, and then the story that they had to show him a DVD of the Katrina mess, because what the hell he was watching. I think he was watching the Bugs Bunny Hour or something like that, but, I mean, he had no clue what was going on down there.
No, that's true, and I think Katrina is, I mean, obviously it's a horrible story in and of itself. There was an interesting post at Think Progress, a leading left-wing blog, yesterday, linking to various stories about what is really going on in New Orleans. I don't think everyone realizes the suicide rate has soared, for example. Only about two-thirds of schools have reopened. Several of the hospitals haven't reopened. Neighborhoods are still essentially uninhabitable. Again, Bush can go down there and say all he wants. The fact is, I think he deserves much of the blame for what happened, for what went wrong. That's not to take, not to say that that Mayor Nagin and the others didn't deserve any blame. But I mean, I think ultimately some of the blame has to come from the top, or has to be directed at the top. And I hope Democrats use it. I don't mean use Katrina as in a kind of sordid political way, but just use it as yet another example of the sheer incompetence of this administration.
Yeah. Well, they're going to wrap, the GOP and Bush are going to wrap themselves around 9/11, and it also should take the rap for, a part of the problems with the Katrina mess.
Well, yeah, they're going to wrap themselves around 9/11. They're going to wrap themselves around terrorism. They're going to claim that Democrats are not trustworthy, that Democrats will not make America safe, mm-hmm. that Democrats want to cut and run from Iraq. And I think Democrats need to respond forcefully and say that, how could they possibly do a worse job than Bush has done? Mm-hmm. I mean, Katrina shows that America was not prepared for a disaster, whether a natural disaster or a disaster caused by a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
Look at Bush's, look at the Portgate scandal, which exposed a major flaw in America's security. That, again, has happened under Bush's watch. Iraq has clearly diverted attention away from the war on terror. So I think there are a lot of areas where the Democrats can hit the Republicans hard, and I think Katrina is a good example of just how this administration has malfunctioned in office.
Yeah, and then well, the whole thing, they it's Nagin's fault, it's Blanco's fault. It's Brownie's fault. It's all this stuff. I mean, it goes back. They said they did, it was a cardball to the story of the last time there was a disaster down there in New Orleans. And LBJ was a president. They said one night he showed up, like the next night, in the dark of night with flashlights, saying, "I'm your president. I'm here to help you," or something like that. So if Bush would have done that same thing, he'd still be riding high. If he did, similar to what he did at 9/11, staying on top of the rubble. If he'd done that, in New Orleans, and I think he'd be riding high, huh?
Well, sure. I think Bush sometimes says the right things at the right time. He certainly said some of the right things after 9/11, and I think that he said some of the right things after Katrina. The problem is follow-through in many ways, isn't it? I mean, again, this is an administration, a White House, that essentially emphasizes spin over substance, that emphasizes communications over policy. And look, New Orleans, you can see it. It's a devastated area, and mm-hmm. I'm certainly not suggesting that it is all Bush's fault. But it clearly is reflective of what is wrong in the White House right now. But I completely agree with you.
Yeah, and then also, last week I said I got a lot of bad emails because I compared. I said that Bush and Cheney and them are like use a visual that they're wearing white beaters or dago tees, and they're kind of raping the country here for the last 6 years. And they're like, "Oh, come on, that's terrible. You shouldn't say that." Well, I mean, some of the stuff that Rush and them have said is minor. What I said, I mean, it's true. This country has been raped for 6 years. And I mean, like with some rape victims, we got some STDs to worry about now. We got the debt, the deficit. This war in Iraq is the big one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you and I are in agreement. I mean, every time I'm on the show, we address this and go over different aspects of it. And I think it bears repeating because the Republicans are very good at winning the public relations battle, and they will obviously try to play those cards going into November because they basically don't have much to run on, do they? I mean, look at the accomplishments of the Republican Congress and of the Bush administration. They really can't run on anything. No. And so they're going to use fear. They're going to play that fear card, and they're going to play that terrorism card, mm-hmm. and they'll play the same-sex marriage card, and they'll try to do what they've done in the past. Now, I don't know. It seems to me that the American electorate is getting smarter. I mean, they can see through this now, and I hope enough of them turn out in enough numbers this coming November that there's a change, and I certainly think Democrats deserve a chance to run the country now. Yeah. I mean, given what's happened these past 6 years, and I agree with you. Liberals or anyone on the left says sort of one nasty thing about Republicans, and it's all over the place. Oh. We're all a bunch of Michael Moores. Mm-hmm. We're all a bunch of you fill in the blank basically.
Yeah, we're all a bunch of commies and tree huggers.
You turn on Bill O'Reilly, turn on Hannity, Rush. You turn on Ann Coulter, I mean Michelle Malkin. I mean, go to any of those bloggers, big time bloggers, and look what they're saying about us.
Oh, yeah, especially what they said about Clinton. Ann Coulter, she said he was gay. I mean, you gotta be kidding me. Yeah. Bill Clinton gay. Are you out of your mind? You know what I mean?
It's not just swift boating. It's swift boating of just the most reprehensible kind. It's smearing. It's character smearing.
Yeah.
And they're very good at it. And well, hey, look, I'm in Canada, but we get Fox News up here.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you can see it anytime you want. Just turn on Fox News and you'll get it.
Yeah.
It passes as mainstream news, and it's not.
Yeah. Fox News. Yeah, they get the. It's like the. My message is called the GOP News Network or something like that. But on my blog, I got a message from somebody saying, "Oh, how dare you attack Bush? Clinton never got bashed the way you're bashing Bush. Are you out of your mind? Were you asleep during those 8 years? the Clinton Chronicles and all that BS, right?
Clinton was remorselessly attacked for 8 years, remorselessly by the right. I mean, whether it was in fact a right-wing conspiracy or not, as Hillary has alleged, mm-hmm. there was certainly a campaign by conservative elements, a well-funded campaign, to tarnish Bill Clinton, to tar his image, and to try to bring him down, which is interesting, of course, because Bill Clinton isn't even all that popular on the left. Yeah. Right? I mean, if you check out the liberal blogs, the places like Fire Dog Lake and and Atrios and Koss. Clinton, you know, they respect Clinton's political abilities, but they certainly don't admire his centrism. I mean, yeah. Bill Clinton was, in a sense, a conservative Democrat, something of a Republican. He said the end of big government is over.
Mm-hmm.
It still boggles me, boggles my mind, why Republicans went after him the way they did, because he clearly was not the kind of threat to conservatism that some of them made him out to be.
Yeah, actually, the chat room, Diggs is there, is saying, how can we not think that when you're all running around spewing the same garbage Michael Moore does? I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not really in the tank there with Michael Moore. That whole, I don't like him. He gets a little too, conspiratorialist and, nasty. Yeah. But what do you think, Michael?
You know, Michael Moore's a bit Oliver Stone-ish, the Oliver Stone of JFK. I mean, mm-hmm. he sees probably grander conspiracies where there aren't any, and admittedly, I liked Fahrenheit 9/11 a great deal. I thought it was an extremely powerful film, and I think there are places where you can pick it apart, and I think there are places where he's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the guiding narrative of Fahrenheit 9/11 is still valid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Bush family's connections to Saudi Arabia are undeniable.
Yeah.
The fact that a Taliban official was in Washington is undeniable. The fact that, you know, Bush had some ties to members of Osama bin Laden's family, again, undeniable. I mean, there's a lot in that movie that is simply undeniable.
Yeah.
I don't share Michael Moore's pacifism, and I don't share his criticism of American power in all regards, but, you know, he still has some valid points to make about how Bush has conducted himself as president.
True. Well, yeah, you got the same thing on the right. You got these people out there, O'Reilly and all them. So I mean, it's on both sides. You know, it's just everybody's got their own perspective, which I enjoy. It's about time the left gets its perspective out there and talk radio, especially. And now you talked about John McCain turning 70. Yeah, I mentioned that as well. You know, if he does win the presidency, I hope not over Hillary, and becomes president, he'll be older than Reagan was. You know, and then McCain would only be in his first term. Reagan was 69 when he was inaugurated.
It is a concern, I suppose. I mean, mm-hmm. he seems to be a fairly healthy person. I mean, his mind seems to be extremely sharp. But I guess who knows what he would be like after, say, 2, 3, 4 years in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I admire John McCain. I always enjoy when he's on The Daily Show, and he and Jon Stewart have such a good rapport together. And I think McCain has some, extremely valid points to make, and I've agreed with him in the past, but, of late he has taken up the neoconservative banner. Most of the neoconservatives have receded into the woodwork, except for some, like Bill Kristol, and McCain is sort of their leading spokesman now. In fact, a couple of years ago, Bill Kristol was up in Toronto speaking at the invitation of my dissertation supervisor at the University of Toronto, and so I had a chance to listen to him and talk to him and so forth. And I've had that chance a couple of times, and he's an extremely bright man. But I mean, the neocons support McCain. I mean, that's clear. Bush was never their man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the man who could possibly lead the neoconservative agenda, who could push for engagement with Syria, with Iran. I mean, who is that? It's someone with national security credentials. It's someone with a military background.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Bush, it's McCain, and that's what worries me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if McCain gets in, he is his own man. He won't be pushed around. But just what kind of entanglements will McCain get America into?
Yeah.
You know, I we don't think about that, but I mean, he is a much more militaristic, much more aggressive figure than George Bush ever has been.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting. I just I don't know. I really can't see the American people putting him in as president. I mean, just the age factor. Basically, it's no big deal. It's a different time now than when Reagan was president. But still, I mean, he'd be what, 72, almost 73 if he's not inaugurated and was 09. I don't know. 4 years, that put him at 77, 78. I mean, that's up there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he's got those credentials, and
yeah.
He's got that, he's got that reputation as some kind of a maverick, even though I think he's a much more of a Republican loyalist than people make him out to be. And
yeah.
you know, he's become a media darling, and so he always gets very positive treatment, generally on both sides.
Well, yeah, because he's been down there, you know, grabbing his ankles for Falwell and all that down there. I mean, that's I think a lot of people would turn him off. He's not the straight talk express that he used to be. Cause now he's, you know, toeing the line there.
Not anymore. I think a lot of it will depend on who the Democrats end up nominating. We've discussed this before, but I mean, you know, if the Democrats nominate someone who is something of an isolationist and who doesn't seem to be tough enough on whether he or she is or not is another matter, but doesn't appear to be tough enough on terrorism, you know, I think McCain has a shot. I mean, it'll be tough for him to get through the Republican primaries, of course.
Oh, definitely. Now, what about the Iraq? It's a lower monthly death toll in Baghdad. You know what? I think there's nobody left to kill in Baghdad, is there?
You know, that's very fun. That's a very interesting point. I didn't even think about that. Maybe that's maybe just through attrition.
Running out of people.
There's going to be no one left. There's no more chocolate in my apartment because I've eaten it all, you know? Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a report in the Los Angeles Times, which usually a very trustworthy publication, a couple of days ago, on the declining death toll in Baghdad. The main morgue in Baghdad is reporting about 1/4 as many casualties as it had the previous month. I think it was 1,800 the previous month in just this one morgue, and it's about a quarter of that. And this is being attributed to the Battle of Baghdad, the sweep through Baghdad being led by American forces.
Actually, you called that a while back. You said there's going to be a second war in Baghdad, and you were right on the target about that. You know, and now I you saw the story on Hardball. They had about the Iraqi troops are refusing to go into the second war of Baghdad. Deserting.
Well, Sean, thanks for pointing that out.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Well, and then do you watch the McLaughlin Group? Do you get the PBS?
From time to time. Yeah. I get it. I watch it from time to time.
Well, McLaughlin, he put the death toll is 2617, which 9 more troops were killed today, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But wounded, severely wounded, amputeed, and mentally ill is 62,800. That's a huge number now.
Yeah, I don't think we... You remember the scandal over the flag-draped coffin from last year. I don't think we know, even begin to know, the full extent of the casualty situation on the American side in Iraq, and I think it's being hidden from us.
Yeah.
Intentionally hidden from us.
Well, and then he ran down the costs. I mean, McLaughlin's hardly a Democrat. Now, he's been a conservative for forever. You know, the $1.5 billion a week does not include the ancillary costs called the tail, which is medical for the troops that are injured and extended care if they're severely injured, all that stuff. That's $400 million a week for that, and the total is $1.9 billion a week for that war.
The financial costs are enormous. The human costs are enormous. You know, again, day after day, you hear stories they've just sort of receded onto the back pages of the newspaper now, and hardly get any coverage anymore. But I mean, every day seems to bring new casualties on the American side. I think the problem, though, with this report in the LA Times is that. The violence, you know, the U.S. forces may be cracking down on some of the violence in Baghdad, but what about the violence everywhere else, right? I mean, we hear about Baghdad because that's the capital city, but in Kirkuk and throughout the Sunni Triangle, you know, the death toll is still enormously high. I mean, even if it goes down, it's only going down relatively.
Yeah, I mean, and what are we accomplishing over there in Iraq now? I mean, I said we can't pull out, you know, just up and pull out all the troops. That would be impossible to do. But maybe we take the, I keep saying the MRSA plan, pull them out to the borders and the oil fields and let the Iraqis have at it, you know, and get this, you know.
That's my dilemma too. I supported the war before it started because I was under you know the impression that Saddam was a much greater threat than he really was, and I was led astray by the rhetoric. And I regret that, just as people like John Edwards have. It was a mistake to be so trusting in this administration. But you know the war has been severely mismanaged. But I mean, what is the solution right now? I mean, if the U.S. pulls out, what will happen in a place like Baghdad? The only reason the death toll is going down is that U.S. forces are there. The Iraqis aren't remotely prepared to do that. And even if Iraqi forces do, you know, who's to say that, that Baghdad and the surrounding region doesn't decline into anarchy, essentially?
Yeah.
I mean, we call it euphemistically sectarian violence, but, you know, you take the U.S. out, and they start going after each other. Is that what we want?
Well, I mean, we could discard the borders and let the Iraqis settle their civil war amongst themselves, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
And then we can go, or like say, Joe Biden, he was on this week with George Snuffleupagus, and he suggested, you know, maybe creating three states of Iraq and have Baghdad be like the central government, like here in the United States. There might be a way to resolve it, because right now you got, you know, the Shiites, you know, patrolling the Sunni areas, and they're going in there and killing them. Why don't you just divide up into three states?
I mean, it seems to make sense. Of course, whenever states have been divided in the past, whether it's Cyprus or Northern Ireland or mm-hmm. you know, Sri Lanka, any of these other places, peace has not been the result. And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure that either side would necessarily agree to that kind of a situation. Even in that kind of situation, I doubt that anything resembling peace could be accomplished without some kind of major international force.
Mm.
You know, the UN is already sending troops into southern Lebanon. I highly doubt the UN wants to get itself involved in guarding the Sunni triangle and preventing the two sides from slaughtering each other.
Yeah.
You know, it just more and more, it seems to me like a lose-lose situation, regardless of what decisions are made in the upcoming months and years.
Yeah, well, and then Bush, of course, he, you know, went off pounding on the lectern that he's going to, as long as he's the president, we're not leaving Iraq, and so he's going to leave it to whoever, you know, to Hillary or whoever it is going to have to clean up his mess, you know?
I think everyone's going to be cleaning up Bush's mess.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and the problem is the budget deficit is so enormous. I mean, how is this going to be paid for? I mean, that's, you know, I have no idea. But
no.
He's leaving an enormous mess to his successor.
Well, and they say by the time this is all said and done, it'd be at least $1 trillion down the drain there in Iraq. I mean, and except we're right back to where we started. If this war in Baghdad is starting over again, we're right back where we started. I mean, it's going to take a woman to clean up the White House, you know?
Well, your listeners who are affiliated with the Hillary Clinton campaign, or who support Hillary Clinton, will appreciate that.
Absolutely,
because I don't see another woman on the horizon right now. I don't see Nancy Pelosi running for president
soon. No, as I said, get Hillary in there, and she'd be like the stake through the hearts of the GOP. Can you imagine what they'll do if when Hillary gets inaugurated? She raises her hand up there in the Capitol in January 2009. They rush, and then we'll have heart attacks. You know, Hannity.
I would like it to happen just for that reason.
Oh, so would I. So would I. They've been asking for this for the longest time. You know, I said at first, you know me, I was kind of like, oh, maybe John Edwards, blah blah. He'll unite the country. And how the hell with that? You know, the Bush and the GOP hasn't done nothing to unify the country. Let's have this little war of these two sides of the ideas, and then they push for Hillary, and get her in there and watch them all. You know, keel over. You know.
You know, she's an extremely admirable woman, a very very bright person, and I'm sort of partial to John Edwards and Al Gore, but I mean I would certainly support Hillary if she were the Democratic nominee,
and
I would love to see the right wing squirm.
And she's got the one of the smartest political strategists in the world sleeping next to her in her bed every night. You know.
That's right. As long as he's around, do not discount Hillary's chances.
Actually, I don't know if you heard that joke from Letterman. He said that about Clinton's birthday. He celebrates 60 years old. Clinton plans to celebrate the same way he does every year. He'll have a romantic dinner, some dancing, and then he'll go home to Hillary. I thought that was pretty good. There's another one here about Hillary. I thought I had it in here. Maybe not. President Bush.
That's a good one.
And Leno said President Bush said the United States is still under the threat of attack and will continue to be right up until Election Day.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Absolutely.
I have a feeling that this threat level will be up and down before the election. What do you think?
Well, that and then the other possible October surprise that one of my co-bloggers, Creature, wrote about the other day. I was away on vacation all last week, and Creature wrote that a Rumsfeld replacement might be an October surprise.
Ah.
I mean, what Rumsfeld is so unpopular. What better way than to appoint, a likable defense secretary who could make some speeches and show that Bush is serious about doing things in a different way.
Very interesting. That's
who that is, I don't know. I can't imagine it would be Lieberman. He's not about to drop out of the race. But I mean, there are various other candidates.
Yeah, that could be. We have to keep our eyes peeled here in any kind of Rove crash and smear campaign. Yeah, I'm sure that's in the offing as well.
Well, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of what they pull out of their hat as we get closer to October, especially if they're down in the polls. And, you know, one poll I think deserves mentioning is Ted Strickland, the Democratic representative from Ohio, is up by 25 points over Ken Blackwell in the latest poll for governor.
Wow.
In that state. I mean, that is huge. I mean, Ohio is a major swing state, and you have a Democrat up by 25 points, and, you know, Sherrod Brown is running neck and neck with incumbent Mike DeWine. So, you know, I mean, things look good for the Democrats right now, and for that very reason, don't put anything by Karl Rove.
Absolutely. Well, with that warning, Michael, we'll let you go.
Great.
And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Know where to reach me.
We'll check you out at the reaction.blogspot.com as well as the One America Committee blog for
and,
John Edwards.
I'm the liberal voice with the moderate voice, so
absolutely.
Come see me there too.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
Welcome.
Have a great night.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that was Michael J.W. Stickings. We thank him very much for being on the program. And once we come back from our break, we'll be joined by Ken Gold of Media Boulevard. We'll talk about part one of our 4400 review, and we'll be right back.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion Live on LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. Thank you everybody listening live. And of course, thank you everybody listening in the chat room. And after the program, you can go on the discussion board for Subject to Discussion over at MediaBoulevard.com, and you can discuss the program there and have at me with my liberal points of view. But, you know, what the hell? You got Rush, you got Hannity, you got everybody else on the right. Why not have a couple of voices on the left? You know, that's called a democracy, right? People don't want to listen to it. They don't have to listen if they don't like what they're hearing. So, that being said, I think Ken Gold is on the line for part one of our 4400 review, and I thought it was excellent, but I'll wait till I get him on the line before we discuss it. And with the musical accompaniment, Mr. Ken Gold will be joining us. And Mr. Ken Gold of Minia Boulevard, are you there, sir?
Yeah, how's it going, Sean?
Hi, very good. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks.
And first of all, I want to thank you, and thank everybody from Media Boulevard for helping me get the word out about the program. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. So, we're very glad to do it.
Thank you. I just want to say it live so everybody knows how I appreciate it. And, of course, you're the poobah there of Media Boulevard, correct?
One of the
grand exalted ruler of LV Rocks is in the chat room. You're one of the grand exalted rulers of Media Boulevard, right?
That's right.
There you go.
I like that title.
There you go.
And I'll see if I can add that.
Now, the last time we had you on, we talked about the Comic-Con. Now, do you know if anybody went to the Battlestar Galactica thing over the weekend?
Not
the convention?
Not from us. Not
Oh, well. Yeah. Anyway, well, I'm still interested in what happened at the Galactica convention. Now, you know what? I thought the 4400 finale was outstanding.
Oh, it was incredible.
It was incredible. I couldn't believe it. I thought, I'm not going to, you know, because I've been trying to catch up, you know, to the show. And I tried to watch as much of it as I could on Sunday because I tape everything else. I tape the Meet the Press and all that. So right. I only got a couple hours of the 4400, but it was incredible, huh?
Oh, yeah. And also the really good news last week, I don't know if you heard or not, but season 4 renewal is definite now.
Yeah, now was that a surprise? I mean, how is it? Do you know, I couldn't find the ratings, 4400. Did you have the ratings? I don't know how it's been doing in the ratings.
You know, I haven't been able to find exact numbers either. Usually, you know, for most shows you see them everywhere, but
yeah.
4400, they're really hard to find. Maybe Koenig might have that when he comes.
Yeah, well, if Koenig's listening, if you can dig up the ratings, we would appreciate it, because I have not been able to find the ratings for 4400. But I'd be curious to see how the show did throughout the day, because they ran, all the episodes back-to-back? Was like a marathon of...
I'm not sure if they did the whole season or just a good part of it, but yeah, it definitely was on all day.
Yeah, and then I just thought it was outstanding. You know, they really didn't do too much with special... They did a few special effects things, but it's like a Battlestar type of a show, you know, very low special effects, high on drama.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then, they open it with, what do you call it, Jordan Collier with Devin Moore leading him to the basement of one of his safe houses.
Right.
Right. And then they did the whole thing with that stuff wasn't the real stuff and all that. What was that? Permycin?
Yeah, they had the fake permycin.
Yeah. Yeah, and then what's her name got shot, right?
Isabel.
And then it was after her father, who's got those powers now, he sent the shot into her, right?
Right.
In her neck, and she was shocked that her father would do that.
Right, and that was also a really big surprise that the shot didn't kill her.
Yeah.
Because it led to think that all season, but it just took her powers away. It took all the permycin out of her system.
So now the permycin is what made her gave her powers.
Right, the permycin is what the people in the future injected into all of the people they took, and that's what caused them to develop the powers.
But
the government's been, I, you kind of get the impression that they're getting all of this promycin that they have in storage from Isabel.
Oh.
So, I mean, it looks like thousands of gallons, so I'm not really sure how they're, you know, how she's producing that much.
I don't know.
but we're actually already hearing some spoilers about season four.
Really?
If you want me to go ahead and...
Well, why not? Yeah, what are the spoilers you have?
Well, apparently Isabel is not done.
Really?
All of the promycin came from her.
Oh.
And kind of the show ended, the cliffhanger ending is everybody's out there. They're distributing the promycin to just the general populace.
Yeah, there's some guy in an alley passing it out, and he turns around, he says, goes to the camera, would you like some? It's a 50-50 or something like that?
Right, right.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a 50-50 shot. Half the people that take it will die, and half will develop an ability.
Yeah.
But all of the promycin came from Isabel, so her body is definitely compatible, and that's kind of what we're starting to hear already about season four, that she's not done.
Really? And now, actually, Media Boulevard magazine, you guys interviewed most of the cast, right? Or some,
right,
of, the, some of the cast.
What's that?
You guys interviewed how many people on the cast?
See, we had four cast members,
wow.
And then the two writers, producers, Craig and Ira. Then earlier in the year, we interviewed Jacqueline McKenzie. So we're getting really good, kind of good response from them. They seem to like us and seem to want to talk to us.
Right.
They may not know that they mentioned that spoiler.
Yeah, they probably end your interviews. It's like me with Galactica. Now, how did they give you any ideas? How's the show? Are they surprised the show has lasted as long as it has?
Yeah, they're really surprised at the response they're getting. And that was actually... this comes from Comic-Con, but the open session at Comic-Con, the open panel, this wasn't directly from our interview, but in the open panel, Jacqueline McKenzie made a real comment about that, just could not believe how many people were in the audience. They,
wow.
And they had them in a room that held about 3,500.
Wow.
In the previous year, they had them in one of the small rooms that held about 100 people.
Jeez. And that was just for the 4,400, right?
Yeah, that was only for the 4,400.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like you said, these Nielsen numbers are out of whack because, you know, these shows, that shows that the show's very popular. Same thing with Battlestar. I think the ratings are, you know, really out of whack there with the popularity. I mean, it's just saying, one of our listeners, Diggs, he's a big fan of the Deadwood. I didn't know these ratings are crazy. You know, most people tape these shows now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, almost everybody I know watches on TiVo.
Yeah, yeah.
Or watches them a day later or hour later anyway.
I mean, Giorgio is saying that the 4,400 rating is 8.9. I don't think that's possible, and unless it's some kind of a huge event on cable, I really don't know.
Yeah, 8.9. That seems pretty high for
that
cable.
That seems pretty awfully high for cable. But Jacqueline McKenzie, who's she play?
Diana.
Diana. Yeah,
the lead character.
Okay, that's the one. Now, she took off with her daughter, right, at the end
right.
of the season, and with her boyfriend that she stole away from her sister, right?
Right, right.
Okay, so I got that straight. And
right,
then,
and they're going to be gone for 6 months, so just kind of during the hiatus, and then you can expect her back right in the beginning.
Really?
Next season.
And then what's his name? He had the son.
Tom Baldwin.
Yeah. Now his son went off somewhere, and they showed him holding a thing of the promycin, right?
Right.
Or
yeah.
That?
So looks like he's going to take it, but that's another thing that we're kind of hearing. Again, you know, all of this stuff is really preliminary, and we just kind of have, I guess you'd say, an early source that's giving us good stuff, but you never know if it's going to actually make it through. But if you'll remember, Kyle, the son. In the miniseries, he was actually the one they were taking.
Oh.
The lightning or whatever came down and hit him, and Sean ran up and pushed him out of the way.
Oh.
And Sean got taken.
Oh. Huh. And then, then did the whole thing with, now, Sean, he tried to save that one woman's life. She took the shot, and her eye, blood started coming out of her eyes.
Right.
What's Devin? Is that her name?
Yeah, Devin.
And then Kevin and Tess, he gets arrested, right? They take him in?
Right.
Yeah, and then now they ended the show with him. He's in the intensive care unit. And it's funny because they showed Isabel in one room and they panned over and he's in the other one, huh?
Right. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, so they're still saying something's, you know, probably going on between those two yet, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely, you know, I guess mind raped him or
really?
Or took the information out of his head.
Yeah, yeah, because he didn't want to talk, and then Joseph Bologna's character, what's his name? I can't keep the name of these people straight. Joseph Bologna's character, not Jordan Collier, but the other one.
Yeah,
Peter Coyote's character.
Ryland.
Yeah, and they said, no, we'll send send her in to get the information out of Sean, and she ends up like, doing something with his head, screwing him up, doing like a Vulcan mind meld on him almost.
Right, yeah.
That's what reminded me.
What a bastard he's turned out to be.
Yeah. Ryland. Yeah, I mean, he's turned like an ass on it. And
yeah,
he
apparently knew, this came out in the episode, he apparently knew from the tests that the government had been doing that half the people that took promycin would die.
Oh, really?
And he just wanted to let it go ahead to discredit Jordan Collier as the Messiah. He wanted Jordan Collier to take the blame for all these people dying.
Wow. Huh. And what else? And then Tom and Diana, I have my notes here. They went to Hazel Corp, and they asked Dennis Ryland why someone would die from taking the promycin, and half the volunteers died within. So it's a super soldier program, right?
Right.
Yeah. And now they did the whole thing with that hangar explodes, and everybody thought Isabel was dead, huh? They thought it killed her.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, too. That was kind of reminding me of, do you remember Carrie, the Stephen King movie from way back with Sissy Spacek?
Oh, yeah, she's just set fire and everything, yes.
Yeah, that kind of reminded me of that, her walking out of there all, you know, her clothes are all torn up, but she's alive. And that scene where that happened, that was great. The kid that's the, I can't remember the character's name, but the kid that's the shapeshifter that was acting like he was Jordan Collier. He says, Jordan Collier has a new world order, and you're not part of it.
Yeah, and he said he flips the trigger, and a whole warehouse explodes.
Right.
Yeah, and then she comes walking out, and then she goes, and it's like she's taken over now. She pretty much brushed him to the side.
Right.
Right, and then she's gonna fight the war, I guess, huh?
Right, and she's going to go back to the 4400 Center, and apparently it make it seem like she's going to start killing children to force Collier to come back.
Yeah, because she went into that classroom with that what's her name's daughter, Tessa's daughter,
Maya, Diana's daughter.
Yeah, now she's the one that could see the future, right?
Right.
Yeah, and she said, "No, you're not going to get away with this," or something. She knew something was, you know, what was coming, I guess. Apparently,
right.
the daughter. And then what happened after that? They shot her, right? That's what the big battle.
Actually, her father injected her with used his telekinesis and threw the syringe at her into her neck and injected her. And then she basically said, "You shouldn't have done that," and tries to use her powers, but she doesn't have them.
Yeah.
And then Tom's holding the gun on her, and he goes ahead and shoots her. They kind of make you, he shoots, and then it goes to black. You kind of think that he has killed her.
Yeah.
But then they kind of explain that later. He shot her in the shoulder. He wanted to see if she really had lost her powers, because if she hadn't, she would have healed herself.
Yeah. And then it ended with what's her name leaving with her daughter, right? We already talked about that. And then so now Nick, now who else did you talk to on the show?
Well, we talked to Jacqueline McKenzie, mm-hmm. and Joel Gretz, the guy that plays Tom Baldwin. Talked to Billy Campbell.
Oh, how's he now? He left the show. They said he left for 6 months on he went sailing around the world for 6 months. That's why he left the show, and he came back and they wrote him back into the series. Right,
right. It was actually, I think it was a little over 12 months, so he's gone a little over a year.
Wow.
Actually, one of the things that he said that got cut from our article even was he agreed before he left to grow his hair and grow his beard.
Oh.
You know, so when he came back, it looked like he'd been gone for a really long time, but he said he really wished he had rethought that, because he's, you know, really hot areas, like along the equator for a good part of that.
Huh.
And having a beard and the long hair was just miserable.
Yeah, now, like I say, they're surprised the show's that kind of following. Now, his character, they kind of make him where he can come and go pretty much a few episodes here and there and leave for a while and come back. Is that right?
Well, he's kind of been on fairly constant and, you know, gone through a lot of changes. I mean, he started out as, you weren't really sure if he was a good guy or a bad guy. I mean, the character's gone through a lot of different, different takes on who he is and what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. They actually talked about when he left, if you'll remember, at the end of season two, he had kind of made friends with the baby, Isabel. And she basically told him or showed him in a vision that he would be okay, that the prophecy about him dying was fake. And they made a big deal about that this season, that she actually, even as a baby, knew that. And she was worried about how he would take that when he came back. Would he be mad at her or what?
Well,
and obviously he was. I mean, he told her, get out of the center and don't ever come back.
Yeah, he threw her out. And then she started choking him with her mind, right?
Right.
Yeah, and then she stopped doing it, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and I guess she, you know, they kind of don't really make it clear if she has power over him or not.
Now, he doesn't have any powers at all?
Well, I guess his power is that he dies and comes back.
He can't die.
That's actually something interesting. We kind of asked them, or actually Christina, the reporter that actually was talking to him directly, asked him about the initials, the JC, and he's kind of the Messiah character, you know, back from the dead and coming to lead people.
Jesus Christ.
Was there any connection from that, or to, you know, to Jesus Christ and that? That actually, it turns out that that wasn't. The original name of the character was supposed to be Jordan Garfield.
Oh, really?
And the network didn't like that because of the cartoon cat. They thought they might run into problems.
Oh, right. Trademark names or something?
Yeah.
Really?
So they told him they couldn't use Garfield, and they came up with Collier. And then a few minutes later, somebody said, hey, well, with what we're planning, we're going to get that, you know, the JC connection.
Now, what do you think about NTAC closing the 4400 center at the end, huh?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Now, pretty much they're going to have to start over again from scratch in the fourth season then, huh?
Well, they're kind of running, you know, they showed that scene with Jordan and then Kevin and Tess kind of in a cabin somewhere up in the mountains by the lake, hearing the news that that the Promisa was starting to work on normal people. So they're kind of on the run anyway, I think.
Yeah.
And Intact definitely knows that Collier took the Promisa.
Oh, so because they ended the show with him, with that doctor, what's his name, and his wife on
Kevin.
Yeah, on that lake. You know, they said something, somebody's on TV, I forget what it was, and they showed him running into the house with them. I mean, they're fishing or something, right?
Right. They heard a news report that one of the people that had taken the Promisa hadn't died, and in fact had, I think it was gone into a hospital and healed her father of Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And that's actually one thing that they're, on the website, the official website, they have a thing called Maya's Diary, and they show kind of her visions ahead of time. And her vision for next year that kind of ended it for her diary for the season was seeing a number, the 4400, and then the number starts changing, and you see 4401, then 4402, and it just starts going faster and faster.
Really? That's interesting. Now, who else did you interview?
Ira Bear and then Craig Sweeney. Ira's the one that's basically in charge of everything.
Really?
And Craig's a co-producer and one of the writers.
Now, what did Ira have to say about the series? I bet you he's as shocked anybody that's gotten as popular as it seems to be, huh?
Well, you know, one of the things that was really a surprise is he said that, you know, there's a lot of metaphors that run through the show. You can kind of compare season two's, the disease all of the 4400 got from the promycin inhibitor. You can kind of compare that to AIDS. There's a lot of terrorist comparisons. And he said they don't really think about that. They don't really sit down and say, we're going to, you know, do a comparison or we're going to do this analogy. They really just write the story. And then kind of flesh it out, and the stuff just kind of comes up. And that was really a surprise. I kind of really thought they would sit down and say, you know, let's do a terrorist plot here.
Yeah, or map out like a thread going out the whole, going throughout the series. It, you know,
right,
shows up every once in a while. It's always in the back of the show and everything.
Right.
And because I read somewhere Ira went on vacation with his kids or something. There's some blog on their on the 4400 site, and they said, you know, thanking all the fans for the support and everything. And you know, there's a lot of bloggers and everything. It's amazing. I didn't realize how popular the 4400 was.
And it's getting more and more popular too.
Yeah. Now, do they have any indication of how long they can keep the show going? Did anybody say how long they can keep it going?
Well, Ira said he has the next two seasons mapped out.
Really?
And that was another thing that, kind of in our lead article, it's on the Media Boulevard magazine. Actually, the two that we did with them are kind of on the main page, so you can see them. But he said that this was really the first season. Well, the first season was the miniseries. They're calling that season one now. Then the second season was the previous year. But this was the first season where they actually knew that they would have the entire season to develop a storyline, and he was talking about that's just so much, you know, more powerful to know that you have the full 13 shows to go through to create the story and to see it developed.
Huh.
And now they've got all of next season, and they have at least another 13-episode order.
Yeah, at least, so it's 13 episodes. And then a lot of people are thinking, I don't know, any indication that the Battlestar audience is basically the same kind of audience that the 4400 is? And there's the idea of maybe they could put the 4400, you know, pair it up with Battlestar?
Well, with the different networks, I'm not sure if they can do that. I guess they're...
Well, they're owned by the same.
They're both owned by NBC, I guess.
So they could switch, you know, they could switch Battlestar over to USA and have those two, you know, paired up. That might be an ideal way.
Right, that'd actually be a really good pairing.
Yeah.
But with Doctor Who and Battlestar, I guess that'll be pretty good too. But
yeah, I don't know. I'm starting to have my doubts, you know, because they're two different types of shows. Doctor Who's more of a comedy backdrop to it, where Galactica is more drama. But hey, you never know.
Yeah, but you're right. The 4400 and Battlestar, they both definitely have that theme running through. Mm. You have the kind of the political, real world stuff going on in the background, kind of as a backdrop to the main story.
And yeah,
I'm sure they have a lot of similar audiences.
Now, any other nuggets from the interviews?
I think those were the main ones.
Well,
that's pretty much, I guess,
How were they? The interview, were they amazed? You know, nice. Glad that people actually talked to them about the series.
Yeah, they're just very friendly. Very. I think one thing that pretty much everybody said is they're kind of in Vancouver. They don't really see the, I guess you'd say, the insanity that we see down in the U.S. with just the popularity. They can walk down the street without being recognized or accosted, and yet they come to America and. They said, they film so many hours and on the weekends, and there's just really no time. They really didn't have a feel for how big it was getting this season until they came to Comic-Con and, came back to the U.S., and it's like, oh, my God, what's going on here?
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, for a show like that, it really started up basically just as a miniseries, and it kind of like, I hate to be, comparing it to Battlestar, but, that started up, as a miniseries too, and it launched into a series.
Right.
Especially on USA, those shows in USA tend to get lost, and then, but then they had The Dead Zone, they got Monk and all that, now that's, with that new one, Psych and everything.
Yeah.
But the 4400 really, at least it seems like the network, it doesn't really plug it all that much. I mean, you see those little goofy USA commercials where they show Sean sitting there and a guy from Monk, asking about the, was this completely sterile and he wants the address of where it was.
Right.
But I mean, it's good to see that the show, taking off. The third season is usually like a make or break,
Right. But one thing they do that is really good is they play the old shows a lot. I mean, all season this year they were playing season two shows, like kind of in off hours. And I think they even replayed the miniseries a couple of times.
Yeah.
So people can actually catch up. If you hook somebody, they can go and get the backstory.
Yeah. Actually, Scully Girl's asking, what is filming in America? We didn't say that. I think he said when they come down here to America, they're shocked at how popular the show is. Is that right?
Yeah. They're filming in Vancouver. And just in Vancouver, we've kind of heard that from everybody we've talked to, from the Battlestar people too, that there's really, it's an entirely different world. Vancouver compared to when they come to L.A. or, just down here. And just seeing the signs and everything, too, I guess there's a lot of advertisement for the 4400 just on billboards and stuff.
Really?
And they see those.
Must be in L.A. or something, because I haven't seen any billboards here in Vegas,
Yeah, and I haven't seen any here either, so.
Huh.
But, in L.A., they see, you'll go driving down the street and see a giant billboard of yourself.
Now, since you watched the season finale, your MVP from the season finale? Who do you think stood out the most in this episode?
Oh, I definitely think Meglin or Isabel.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, her character was just, you really got to see what she truly is, or that she's really the bad guy in this. And
Yeah, I guess I was kind of I think her father really that scene where you could tell he agonized having to do that thing with the shot,
So, that his character kind of bothers me. I mean, he's a little bit wishy-washy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was attacking Sean earlier in the season for dealing with the Nova group.
Yeah.
And then he got put in power, as the co-leader or whatever by was it Matthew, the guy that Isabel killed, the left. And now then Jordan wants to do the same thing, and he's like all for it at first, and now he's back to kind of, oh, gee, that's a bad thing to do.
Yeah, unless Jordan Collier's got some kind of mind control power or something like that, huh?
Yeah, well, Tess does. The doctor's wife definitely has the mind control.
Yeah, now she disappeared, right? Yeah, something came down and took her away at the end of the
episode. That was Alana.
Oh, Alana, sorry.
Yeah.
And a ball of light came down and took her away, right?
Yeah, so apparently, and that was something that Maya said, As she was leaving and Alana was saying goodbye, she said, "We'll see you in 6 months." And Maya said, "Well, I'll be back, but you won't be here."
Yeah. I thought that meant she was going to die. That's what I thought. I thought that meant that Alana was going to die.
Yeah.
I didn't think that ball of light was going to take her away. Now, what's that? Is that the same ball of light that took the 4400 away to begin with?
Well, that's what you'd think.
Oh.
That's kind of what they're making you think. But that was actually another question that we asked Joel Gretsch, the guy that plays Tom Baldwin, is he ever going to have anybody in his life that stays around? I mean, they took his son away. They, you know, Lana disappeared when she got in trouble for helping out the 44 or the Nova Group.
Yeah.
Now she's disappeared again. Now, one thing that was kind of interesting that both he and Jacqueline McKenzie, that plays Diana, commented on is, you know, they're kind of each other's family in the show, but they've been very, very careful throughout the show. And Ira Bear actually made this point, too. They've been very careful not to have any sexual tension between them. You know, you think back to X-Files with Mulder and Scully. You know, there's never going to be a time when the audience is wondering when is Tom and when are Tom and Diana going to get it on or kiss? Or
yeah, I never really thought about that. Yeah, I never really considered them two, you know, pairing up. So they plotted that out that way, huh?
Yeah, and that's deliberate, but they're, you know, kind of each other's best friend. And
well, that's good.
You know, now Tom is married, and Diana supposedly is going to get married to this guy when she's gone.
Yeah, but then with Alana abducted and then Kyle, who knows if he's going to live or die when he takes that shot of permycin, huh?
Yeah.
And then, is he the main character on the show? Well, it's not really a main character, is there?
Tom or the son?
Tom.
Yeah, I'd say Tom and Diana are really kind of the main characters. Hmm. You know, everybody else is pretty important, but really the show is kind of focused on them all the way through.
Yeah. Now, how's he looking? Is he looking forward to, you know, you say 2 more years, 5 years? Or do you get any idea how long their contracts are?
I think they're under 5 years, but I'm not sure about that.
Probably. That's usually the standard is a 5-year contract. Yeah. So that'd be interesting. And I bet you they're all just bowled over. They can't believe the show is, you know, taking off the way it is, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think really any of them had anything big before this.
Yeah, especially Tom Baldwin. I don't remember too much of what he did. Of course, Peter Coyote, he's pretty big. And what's his name? Billy Campbell. Is that his name?
Yeah.
I keep murdering him. But yeah, he's been on a few things. He was in that one movie he played. I can't remember. He was on a series on ABC as well, I believe, with Cella Ward, I believe, right? I'm pretty sure.
I think so. I'm not really sure about that, but he was kind of commenting about how this was his first really big role, also.
Yeah, I mean, it's
in
just
the article.
I came to this show late, but I mean, I'm really the whole season was just incredible. I mean, I thought, oh, I'm not going to get a hold of this story. I'm still kind of trying to figure out what's this, what's that, because they reference stuff that's happened in the past, you know.
Right.
And so it's like, and so I'm going to have to go out and grab those DVDs probably if I can catch up on the show. And then, but it's just, yeah, I enjoy it completely.
Oh, yeah, it's a great show. It's one of the best on TV, right up there with Battlestar.
Yeah.
Now, another thing that was just kind of interesting that I hadn't heard that kind of came out of our interviews was Jacqueline McKenzie actually is really multi-talented. She actually sings and is an artist. She paints as well.
Really?
And her website, which there's a link to it from the article on our site, but she's got samples of her paintings and just kind of impressionist people paintings, but they're really good. But her music, I think she's only done like 3 or 4 songs, but she they actually used one of her songs in the season 2 finale, so like a year ago.
Really?
And I hadn't heard that before. That was really kind of a neat little tidbit.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So they can go back over to Media Boulevard magazine to read all the interviews then, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it'd be good. Everybody get some insight about the the actors and everything and how they feel about this series taking off. And it sounds like it's got at least two more seasons to run, huh?
Well, they definitely have a plan for 2 more seasons. Yeah. So I guess it kind of depends, like always, on how it does next year.
But yeah. Well, same thing with, it's NBC Universal. You know, who knows what they can do next? I mean, they already put ECW on Sci-Fi. Who knows? And Monday they had Raw on Sci-Fi, so it was interesting as well.
Yeah, you never know what they're going to do.
Yeah. So, well, Ken, we'll let you go because Koenig Rules is waiting in the ring, the wings. All right?
All right. Well, thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Okay, you too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. And it was Mr. Ken Gold of Media Boulevard Magazine and Media Boulevard .com website. We thank him very much for being on, talking about the 4400. And in a moment, we'll be joined by Mr. Dr. Koenig Rules, the mad professor of the program, to finish off our 4400 discussion. And hopefully he'll have some Battlestar Galactica news. So, and hopefully he'll have the ratings as well. because it's hard to find ratings for these sci-fi shows. Same thing with Battlestar. The last five or six episodes, he had a hell of a time trying to find the ratings, you know? And then Scully Girl will be back next week, because with Stargate being off the air this week, I figure, you know, a good way to bring her on next week, we could talk about the Stargates. So that, you know, spreads things out. Excuse me, I haven't been drinking on job. It's just water. I don't know what's with this water. It makes me burp. But she'll be on next week to review the 4400, whatever it is, the Stargate episodes. And then we'll preview what's going to happen on the following week with Stargate. So I think it makes sense. And Taken was pretty big, one of the highest rated miniseries on sci-fi. So Taken, I like the triangle myself. I thought that was very good. I'm still surprised they didn't turn a triangle into a series, because that, you know, they could do that, I guess, kind of, sort of. I thought that was very good. And then Earthsea. I'm surprised we haven't seen an Earthsea movie, but I understand the lady who wrote the book, apparently she wasn't too thrilled with the miniseries for some odd reason. I don't know. I mean, it's a cable channel. They can't blow the whole budget on this miniseries, but I liked Dune. I saw the first Dune. I thought that was very good. And then I didn't see The Children of the Dune, so, but, you know, I like the first one. You see these sequels, you always wonder, oh, is it going to ruin the original for me? Because I like the not the Dune they did with Patrick Stewart, but the Dune they did with, what's his name, William Hurt. But I thought it was outstanding, and so we'll see what happens with that. Canadian Broadcasting posted the season 2 of Doctor Who will start October 9th, Thanksgiving Monday in Canada at 8 p.m. So, and the Scully Girl agrees with me, Triangle is good. Triangle is outstanding. So they got some potential there. If they make some of these movies in the series, why not, you know? So I think now we're joined by Dr. Koenig Rules. Exiting the TARDIS once again is the Mad Professor, Dr. Koenig Rules.
Hey, is that my new theme song now?
We change your theme every week.
Oh, okay. I thought that sound effect of the TARDIS was my joint.
We're lucky we didn't say, gave you the Galactica theme again, yeah?
Nah, that's okay.
Darth Marley saying they butchered the Dune and Earthsea books. Yeah, I heard that the author of Earthsea, she wasn't happy with the way they treated her work of...
With the sci-fi?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, Tom was on Taken.
Ah.
He played that crazy, mad military guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was despicable. He killed his wife.
Wow.
In Taken. So it was hard for me to even watch the 4400 at the beginning.
Wow.
Because he played the antagonist in Taken. But he's a great actor. I believe he's married to Shatner's daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a revelation.
Papa Shatner.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we'll see Shatner show up on the 4400
next season. Oh, God. He could be the ball of light.
Or maybe he'll show up on the Caprica spin on him and Larry Hagman.
Oh, by the way, some news about Caprica.
Uh-oh, what is it?
They interviewed Ron Moore, and Caprica hasn't been greenlit yet.
Wow.
And Ron is saying, we haven't been given the go-ahead yet, so I don't know what that means.
Now, wait a minute. I thought they announced the series is coming, but what do you mean? They announced it, but they're not even green-lighted it?
They submitted a second draft of the pilot, and they're waiting.
See, you know what? I've had a problem with this prequel business.
Right.
You know, because we all know what happened after that. Won't they just do a spinoff of the current series? Like,
right,
like,
I agree.
Like with Stargate, they could do crossovers if they have to.
I agree. For Battlestar Season 3, they've got all the stories lined up, including the finale, and it's going to be a cliff.
Uh-oh.
Whether they pick up Season 4 or not, it's the story's not going to be resolved at the end of Season 3.
Really not.
So there's some Galactica spoilers out there, but that was interesting. I mean, I hope that if they are going to cancel it, after season three, they have some type of wrap up, a 2-hour movie or something.
Yeah, yeah. I wish. Yeah,
if they cancel it, you know, I still think that the word's out on that. I mean, there's nothing definite on that yet.
I was just going to say, with, you know, with the 4400 and Heroes, I'm waiting for them to come out with.
What?
I was going to play. It's not going to play. Never mind.
Are you going to play? Oh.
What? John, your voice has changed.
That was Con. That was Con. He was going to play something for you. But, Heroes. I saw some previews of Heroes. It looks good. It kind of reminds me of Mutant X. Uh-oh. What's
this? Yes.
Oh, here you go.
An X-Men type of storyline. Yep.
Here you go, Conan.
Why don't they start showing this show on Sci-Fi?
Here we go.
What is this?
Greatest American Hero.
I was gonna use this as your intro today, but
yeah, I was gonna use it.
The Mad Superhero Doctor.
Well, that's the show that they change the guy's name every week, because that was when the Reagan assassination
Hinckley.
Attempt happened. They kept changing the guy's name from Hinckley to Hercules to all every week. Ralph.
Who?
When that show was on is when John Hinckley attempted to kill Reagan,
right.
And his name is Ralph Hinckley on the series. So then they start changing his name, Henley, Homely,
right.
and they finally went back to Hinckley. They got sick of it.
That's right.
That's a little tidbit from Greatest American Hero.
That's right.
But
I love that show.
It was excellent.
Yeah.
Now, if like I said, Heroes, I've seen the previous. Like I said, it kind of reminds me of Mutant X. Yeah, you ever watch that Mutant X show?
Oh, yeah. Well, I watched it because of the females.
Oh, but it kind of reminds me of that. And then hopefully it'll be good, but it's on NBC. You know?
I know, and it's going to be NBC Monday night.
Yeah, now, actually, chat rooms, what did you think of the 4400 season finale?
I thought it kicked ass.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that, and this is season three of the show, I hope Battlestar can rise just like the 4400 has this year.
Yeah, I mean,
I really do. Of all the seasons, season three was the best.
Yeah, hopefully, I think so, because you know, you said it too, that you know they tried some things out in season two in Galactica and it didn't work very
That's
well.
Right.
So now that maybe they've learned, you know, the story's maturing, the show's maturing, and maybe they know now what they can get away with, what they can't get away with,
mm-hmm.
and the long layoff. Hopefully, the long layoff will help them more than hurt the series. You know,
that's right.
Yeah.
And I think what really worked to the advantage of the 4400, and I didn't know it would work so effectively, because Jordan was around the globe. The actor who plays Jordan,
Billy Campbell?
Billy Campbell.
Paul Campbell?
I know, Paul Campbell.
Billy Campbell.
I thought without Jordan, the show would suffer terribly, but it worked really well, and by the time Jordan came back, those last three episodes were just kick-ass.
Yeah, like I said, it's my first season watching this show, and I actually got into it. You know,
I told you.
Yeah, seeing
did
Isabel.
I not tell you this was a good series.
Yeah, especially seeing Isabel, you know, do her Carrie impersonation coming out of that.
That's right.
Hangar.
I think it's now. I'm going to state
Whoa.
Something here that I'm sure is going to get the wrath of some of the
Uh-oh.
People in the chat room. I think it's better than Who.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. I really enjoy some of the characters. Peter Coyote.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
isn't he excellent?
Yeah, they have quite a cast there.
Yeah,
assembled.
They do. And while I like the Doctor Who self-contained stories, I really like the soap opera quality of a series that moves. And these 13 episodes, I mean, if you look at the first six and then in season two, if you get those two, the movement is just not there. Season one was the slowest moving. Season two sort of picks up a little bit, but three, every week something was happening.
Huh.
And my prediction is if they can do that with Battlestar, it'll be on for season four. They can't afford to have these long arcs. They can't afford to have these crappy standalone episodes. They got to do something every single week on Battlestar.
Really?
Right?
Well, it's like somebody else said, maybe every week they can blow up one of the ships in the,
in
the fleet.
I would love to
have an explosion
even,
every week.
Yeah, I would love to see even a return to the original Battlestar Galactica in terms of, you know, destroying a base star, destroying a base ship,
yeah.
You know, destroying an armada of Cylons. You know, I mean, I just would love to see that on a week to nonstop action. I mean, they've got to do something to get the hype out there. Oh, have you seen Battlestar Galactica this week? Oh, that space battle is awesome, what they're doing
yeah.
on television. That's the only way they're going to get the ratings not only steady but even increase.
Well, I was telling Ken Gold there from Media Boulevard that, you know, the 4400 didn't have any big, huge special effects
right.
or anything, but the story just drew you in.
That's true, but I think with Galactica, it's got a reputation to maintain. The
mm-hmm.
old one was a fairly expensive, even though it looks hokey now, but it was a fairly expensive science fiction show, and it was into the visuals and the effects.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one of the reasons why it slipped in the ratings is because it's doing too much without the special effects. And now, let's get the special effects. Let's understand the Cylons more. Let's just do it all this season as much as possible, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
let's reveal if there's an Imperius leader or a number one. Let's not keep people hanging for season 4 or 5, which may never come.
Dead.
Let's do it, and let's do it now. Let's throw some carrots out there for the audience. They've been waiting long enough to know what the heck's going on.
Well, there's two things. One is that the first season, you know, you're not sure what to expect, so you watch it.
Right.
You're not sure of the pace. And
right.
So you're like, oh, it's great. Then the second season,
yeah.
you're expecting something, and they kind of didn't deliver because they kind of kept with the same pace. It wasn't
right.
worse. It's just they kept with the same pace.
Yeah.
It was kind of slow.
Right.
There wasn't that many Cylons.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is technology with DVRs
yep.
yeah.
and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't watch it. I tape it, and
yeah.
I watch it.
Right.
So that doesn't count.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you count,
that's right.
If
yeah, you're
you count all
the
people that
are live.
Right. Well, I mean, you just can't sit in front of the TV all the time.
Yeah, you said they have to do something. They have to speed it up or, you know, blow up a ship in the fleet every week or something like that.
That's
but
right.
Look, they're not the only show. Look at even the major networks.
Yeah.
All their shows, their ratings
yeah,
are
all the shows are dropping.
Down.
Except
not that people aren't watching. It's just there's so much other stuff to watch.
Yeah.
They're tuning
and
into other stuff.
And if you remember, even on Stargate this season,
mm-hmm.
the most memorable episodes to SG-1 had to do with the Ori.
Yeah.
You know, the first one or two episodes, and then this last one or the week before. Those
mm-hmm.
were the most memorable because those were the ones with the great space battles. So
yeah.
now they really got to pull out all the stops with Battlestar.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a choice here.
Now,
you know?
Actually, a question for the chairman. Would you consider the 4400 battle better than Battlestar? Ooh.
Ooh. Battlestar has a place in my heart.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I've been with Battlestar a lot longer than I have the 4400.
Whoa.
Though I got to admit, I was enjoying myself that last episode. I just was enjoying myself. I was saying this is great.
Which one? 4400.
What?
Which one? The 4400.
Yeah, the 4400.
Yeah.
This is great television.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been so impressed with what was going on, and they still have questions like the Vision with Tom dying, the Vision with Richard dying.
Mm.
What's going to happen there? Because that big battle
has
yet to be taken place. So,
yeah. And then what happened to what's her name, Alana? She goes
exactly.
The ball
now,
of light took her away.
Now I'm wondering if she was taken up by the good humans or was she taken up by the bad humans, because they've referred to two groups of humans, ones that want to shape history for the better and then a group that's opposed to that. So I'm wondering if these aren't the same human group that future humans that took up the original 4,400 people, but the insurgents, whatever you want to call
yeah.
them. So.
Actually, the chairman was talking about some about it's interesting, NetRanger is saying it's interesting that a lot of shows have started having product placement to account for no one watching commercials. I don't. He says he doesn't think they can work on Battlestar though. I don't think so unless they have like some kind of a Trojan condoms up, glow in the dark condoms or something. I can't see how that would work. But I know. And Stargate SG-1, they said, you know, this episode is available tomorrow on iTunes.
Yes.
I wonder if sci-fi is shooting themselves in the foot by putting all these shows on iTunes, why sit there and watch the damn show live?
I think iTunes is affecting the ratings. But I also think, I agree that the pace it was the same pace for the second season, and it seems slower because there were more episodes. See, what the 4400 has is an advantage over Battlestar. Mm. 13 episodes. And if you remember, season one of Battlestar had 13 episodes. You could keep up the pace much better with 13. When you have 20, there's a lot of drag.
Yeah.
And while people like more Battlestar, I'm getting to be one of those individuals now that think because of the success of the 4400, maybe they should cut back. It won't be as expensive if they do 13 as opposed to 20, and then they can really move the story along.
I didn't sit there and figure it out, but I don't know from the commercials in the first season, the second season, they, you know, after the first season, like, oh man, we can make some money now.
Yeah.
So they might have tried to get more commercials in season two. I don't know.
And take away from the show.
Yeah, that right. might have. Well, not take away from the show, but you're like, well, we can draw it out more. We can put more commercials. Mm-hmm. And instead of sticking like one show in one episode, we can actually take two shows or one episode and kind of draw it out.
Put more commercials.
Well, I mean, let's say, we got 40.
It's like Pegasus. The Pegasus story, had three episodes.
That was drawn out,
they ended
it
with the cliffhanger, and they came back with two parters. They strung
and then
out.
By
and
they probably could have done that. The second part, weren't we even hearing that, that was it with the space battle? I heard it was going to be, really awesome and everything, and within 1 or 2 minutes, that's it.
It was done. And then Darth Marley's saying, what about the refusal to allow SG-1 to go to a different network? Whoa.
Yeah, I think that if Battlestar ever does get canceled, and eventually it will, I think they'll do that with Battlestar, too.
Really? No, because they're saying Sci-Fi apparently refused to allow SG-1 to go to an air network.
And I think they'll do that with SG Atlantis.
Really?
They'll do that with when they cancel a show,
they're going
to claim the rights to it. Yep.
Wow.
Yep, well, I know.
Well, they had said that they wanted to change the name. I remember when they brought Brent Broder on, whatever the hell's name is, they said, they want to change the name of the series to Stargate Command.
You had Ben Broder on?
No. They talked to him.
Wait a minute, Sean. No. you didn't tell me about that.
I wish. And what they said, when they brought him on, they wanted to change the name of the show to Stargate Command.
But
Sci-Fi refused to let them change the name. So I wonder if they can go ahead and change the name and move the show to a different network. I don't know.
I don't know. It is showing a little bit of age after 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, I'd rather, and Stargate Atlantis, I've been really impressed with over the last couple weeks where they focused on Weir, now they focus on John Shepard. Mm. I really like Atlantis. I mean, that's season three for Atlantis.
Yeah.
Is that season three for Atlantis?
This is the third season.
Yeah, and it seems like Atlantis is now, second season of Atlantis I couldn't get into, but this third season has been dynamite because you're finding out more about the characters.
Yeah.
Like the female commander, like John Shepard. I didn't even know that the Wraith could reverse the aging process where they're draining Shepard, and then they can bring him back to his youthful self. And it's sort of like, the Wraith have that power now? That's interesting.
Yeah, actually, Rissimmer, whoever it is in the chat room saying it, but Will... the corpse of SG-1.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's two entirely different audiences.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe Who is sort of like the audience for Stargate.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It might be that Who isn't necessarily a good lead-in to Battlestar because it's a different demographic, a different group that's going to be watching Battlestar. But then again, maybe they're thinking with whose second season they'll be bringing in new people, new viewers, and hopefully then that will increase the ratings for Battlestar. I think there's a reason.
Yeah.
They're doing that instead of pairing it with like SG Atlantis, which is showing signs of not people watching it either.
Huh.
So it ought to be interesting how they do this in October and what the initial ratings are going to be.
Yeah. Now the everybody went more to us talk more about the 4400. Now
yep.
Isabel, now she her father gave it a shot, and
right.
she survived the explosion in the
right.
Hangar, and then at the end they showed her in the hospital bed right next door to Sean, and
right.
then they showed Tom at Sean's bedside, almost like he's made
right.
him like a son, I guess, to him. And now for next season, they when Ken was on, they said that
mm-hmm.
they've given some spoiler. He gave some spoilers
right.
away about the 4400.
Right.
Now, do you think the show in the third season they really hit its stride? Because they said that Ira, the guy who produces
mm-hmm.
it, he said they have two more seasons left in it.
Yeah. Oh, easily.
Really?
I don't think that when they started this show, I really don't. They had this whole Bible developed because they had to up the plot because they weren't sure that the first season was going to get after the first season they were going to get picked up for a second. So they sort of developed a mini closure by that ending there. It's actually humans in the future that are doing this. That wasn't supposed to be revealed till season 4 or season 5. So I think what they had to do then was, now let's go back to the drawing board and see what we can do for a season 2. And they may have had a little bit of storyline there, but it was in the development stage for season 2. And then season 3, they just executed flawlessly, because then it's sort of like it just followed through after season 2. And, they can easily give a season 4, a season 5, a season 6, because the whole thrust now in the show is, I don't want to see a different 4400 each week.
Mm.
That was sort of what season 1 and a little bit of 2 did. I want to see now the intrigue with the Nova group. I want to see the intrigue with Ryland's group. I want to see what happens to poor Tom. And you're right. I feel really sorry for Tom. He's losing it all, you know? Losing his son Kyle, losing Alana. I mean, I really feel sorry for the guy.
Yeah, now your MVP from the season finale, what do you think?
I think, while overall, in all of the episodes, I think Tom did a great job. I really think Sean is good. Sean, because it was just interesting how he could be manipulated at times, but at other times he would reach a voice. I mean, that interaction between him and Isabel was just completely priceless
mm-hmm.
in terms of when they meet up together again. And I think it's Sean. Jordan is my second. I really like Jordan.
Yeah,
you know?
Did you like the way that they had that ending scene where he's at the lake at the cabin with what's his name? You know, that doctor.
Yeah, Kevin Burkhoff and Tess.
Yeah, I did. He's fishing with them and everything.
And it's sort of like, I like the guy who plays Kevin because he's the reanimator, and I like the girl Tess because she was from Firefly. So I mean, it's sort of like I like those characters.
Now,
so
that guy who played Kevin, he's
the reanimator.
Wasn't he on DS9?
He played a lot of aliens.
Yeah.
He played one of the Dominion?
Yes.
And then he also was a regular on Enterprise.
Oh.
He played one of those blue-skinned Andorians.
Yeah.
He's great.
With the antlers moving around. That was Enterprise? It wasn't Voyager? It was Enterprise?
Voyager, he might have played... No, it was Enterprise with the Andorian.
Wow.
But he might have played a recurring alien on Voyager, too. He was... He, He's great.
Yeah,
because
he looked
actor.
Familiar, and then finally I heard that voice. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, he's on DS9 with the Dominion, and
yes,
he was always
yes.
interacting with the Founders, that lady that was trying to wipe them all out. What was her name now? She was a shapeshifter like Odo was.
Yeah, and she was trying to convince Odo
yeah.
to go with them. Yeah, I forget her name. It's
yeah.
been a while.
Yeah. Oh, Darth Marley saying that Kevin was Wayoon, Brunt, and many others. His
yes.
name, Jeffrey Combs
Wayoon
is his name.
From Deep Space Nine, and then the Andorian from, he's great.
Yeah, Shran
so,
on Enterprise.
Right. What?
Yeah, he was Shran on Enterprise.
Right.
So
wow.
That was...
But the 4400, I can't just praise it enough, and I'm so glad that you decided to watch it, and I'm so glad you're deciding to cover it.
Absolutely. Well, Koenig, I hear the TARDIS warming up for you. We'll send you back into the TARDIS.
Yes, I'm going back.
Mad Professor, go back to your lab and cook me up some ratings, please.
I will.
All right, good night,
care.
Sir. Bye. And that was Dr. Koenig Rules, the Mad Professor, with our 4400 review and Battlestar Galactica news. Next week, Scully Girl will be back with a Stargate review. So join us in the discussion over at MediaBoulevard.com at the Subject to Discussion board to continue this discussion. Tomorrow's Daily Noise. I'm Sean Mack. Sean Daly, good night. Have a pleasant tomorrow.
LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
What do beautiful girls, the Olympic Garden Gentlemen's Club, and the WWE pay-per-view have in common?